For us to get started. Tonight, it is my pleasure once again to introduce our speaker for the evening, Dr. Keith Henry, and he will be presenting the topic on hypertension. Now, again, how many of us have been out every night? Wonderful, wonderful. Well, remember we started out with the State of the Nation Health Address, the Laws of Wellness, presented by both Dr. Henry and Dr. Orette Morgan. Monday, we covered obesity by Dr. Morgan. Tuesday, cancer by Dr. Henry. Wednesday, diabetes by Orette Morgan II and Dr. Orette Morgan. And we had a day off yesterday, and I hope everybody got some rest and everything and took some notes and are coming back tonight to fill in the gaps on what we all need to learn. And so tonight, we are going to be blessed with a presentation on hypertension. Now, I just want to remind you that those of you that have been consistent in returning night after night have an opportunity to win one of these wonderful cookbooks. I tell you, I was perusing through them, and they are just fantastic, even for someone like me who really doesn't like to cook. But anyway, I also want to let you know that tomorrow the presentations will start at 5 p.m. and 7 p.m. respectively. They are going to be dealing with the female and male issues, okay? So you don't want to miss that. Also, just to prepare you, if you are interested in getting a copy of the subjects through either CD or DVD, after tomorrow night's last presentation, please stop by the sound booth in the back, and they will direct you as to whether they're available, what the cost will be, etc. So keep that in mind. Sit back, relax, get your notebooks out, take your information, write it down, and apply it to your lives as I am doing to mine, and I know that you will be blessed. Thank you, and God bless you.
Good evening. Once again, we're back. We're drawing to the end of this series. Tomorrow will be the final. Will be the final presentations. And as she spoke about tonight, we'll be looking at hypertension, better known as high blood pressure. But as we've been doing each night, we have been starting off with a hands-on demonstration. And tonight the demonstration will be the Russian steam bath. It will be the Russian steam bath. Now the Russian steam bath is excellent for the purposes of creating an artificial fever in the body. It increases white blood cell activity. It also works to increase sweating, to sweat out toxins. And it's very, very effective, especially when you the first signs or symptoms of a cold or the flu. It's very, very effective. Again, it's called a Russian steam bath. Now, I went to try and find a bucket in there, and I didn't find one, so we're going to have to do the illustration without the bucket, but you'll get the idea. Now, can I have a volunteer? Okay, now he's been at work, and he's noticed that he's starting maybe to get a little sore throat, the first stages. And the thing about a cold or a flu, your best chances of getting the jump on it is when it first starts. If you get the jump on it when it first starts, you can knock it out about 99% of the time. But if it gets its hooks into you, you're going to have problems. So, okay, we have him here. Say his throat is a little bit sore, starting to get a little scratchy. What we're going to do is we're going to start off by putting his foot with basically a hot foot bath. Now, Dr. Morgan mentioned to you the other night about a hot foot bath for relieving pressure, for relieving a headache. In this particular instance, it's the same thing, but you're just going to bump it up a notch. So you're going to have a hot foot bath, and normally the water would be about 104 degrees. That seems hot, but it's not that hot. If you don't have a thermometer, like he said, test it with your elbow. So it's going to be about 104 degrees. Okay, so imagine that he has his feet now in the water. It's 104 degrees. Now, if we were actually doing this, what would happen is we would have him put his, we'll probably put a little bit of water in the bucket, have him put his feet in, and then we would pour as we add water, because we want to keep it up at about 104 degrees. So as we add water, we'll pour it over like this, but we'll pour it over our hand to make sure that it's not too hot. And we also will talk to the person and say, you know, is it too hot, and communicate with them and let them let you know what's going on. Now, we have his feet in the water. It's at about 104 degrees. What we're going to do next, now, this is a sheet. But what you will have, ideally, is you can use, and again, this is for things you can do at home. You can use a shower curtain or a plastic bag. The whole idea is you want to trap the heat in. So what you're going to do, you're going to have his feet in the water. Behind him, before we go there, behind him, you're going to have a tea kettle. You know the kettle that you put on and they blow the steam out? These days you can get one at Walmart and they have the electric ones. You just put water in it and plug it in and you put it behind the chair and the water will get hot and the steam will begin to come out of the head. That's why they call it a Russian steam bath. So now what you're going to do, you're going to take it can even be a garbage bag, something that's plastic, shower curtain. And you're going to take it, and you're going to put it around the person like this. Now, you want the feet to be still in the water, but you want the feet to be covered along with the bucket or the pan. So everything is in. The back will be, the kettle will be covered as well with this. Also, you don't want any steam getting out. So you can tuck this down in the shirt. Now, you have the water is at 104 degrees. You have the steam coming up. So everything is trapped in. The person will begin to get, they will begin to get hot. Now, because this also raises the pressure of the body. Now, at the same time, you are going to, there are a number of ways you can do this. You usually have someone helping you, and you're going to have a cold compress. Use a smaller towel than this normally. Like I said, I have an actual cold compress, but I'm trying to make this as simple as possible if you're doing it at home. You take this, and you can have a bowl of cold water there with ice in it. Just put it in, soak it. Make sure to keep it around the head this way. You can also put one at the back of the neck, because as the body temperature begins to go up, you don't want it to get, it can be dangerous as the because if the body gets too hot, the brain can become overheated. So this is why you keep this here on the head and also behind the neck. You can have another one there. Also, what I do is also I'm taking the temperature of the person. I want to get the temperature up to about 102, 103. So you have someone, you want to always keep a watch over the temperature, but you don't want to get too high. And so as the temperature is going up, you're making sure the water stays at 104 degrees. You're making sure that the water and the steam is trapped inside. And you're making sure that their temperature gets up to about 102, and that their head area stays cold. Again, if not the person, now the contraindications or the things that may pose a problem and you shouldn't do it, if the person is diabetic or if the person has atherosclerosis or high blood pressure consistently, it could be a danger in doing it. So you really have to be careful because this will also raise the blood pressure to some degree. It will raise the body temperature. It will increase the white blood cell activity to destroy viruses or bacteria in the body. Very, very effective, very, very effective therapy. Well, if you want to get the temperature up to 102, but you'll keep going until you get the temperature up to 102. The question is, this treatment, how long do you do it and for how often? Say if the person is coming down with a cold, I would do it maybe two or three times a day. And as soon as they're done, take a cold shower and go straight to bed. And this is a very effective therapy. There's only one other therapy that I know, which is called a fever bath, that is more effective than this one for boosting the white blood cell, the activity of the immune system. Yes. And just take it over 102, 103 in that area, and you can stop. And again, I would say maybe, you know, a couple of times a day, three times a day. And normally if you get it early on, it will knock it out relatively quick, and you might not have to do it but once or twice. Thank you. Any other questions on that? That's a therapy that could actually save you a trip to the emergency room and also a lot of suffering, especially if you can knock a flu out before it gets a hold of you and you incapacitate it for a couple of weeks. Now, on to tonight's topic. Are there no other questions on the Russian steam bath? Okay. It's more so for adults. It can be done on children, but that's a little bit different. It's basically the same, but I would do it a little bit different. We may be able to give you the alteration for a child. But as long as your main concern is the temperature, the body temperature. And again, what you're doing is you're trying to induce a artificial fever. A fever is good when it's controlled and when it's used correctly. How many people in here have high blood pressure or know someone that has high blood pressure or has known someone that has high blood pressure? Quite a few. Now, the thing about it is that there are a lot of people that have high blood pressure and they don't even know it yet. As we talked about with the diabetes, there are millions and millions and millions of people who are pre-diabetic already, and they don't know it yet. Same thing with high blood pressure. This is why they call it the silent killer. And here I have a sniper there, because those guys are silent killers. You don't see them or hear them until it's too late. Blood pressure, high blood pressure, hypertension works in a similar fashion. Okay, let's look at some statistics. High blood pressure, hypertension killed 56,561 people in the United States in 2006. 56,000 people. About 74.5 million people in the United States, age 20 and older, have high blood pressure. How many people? 74.5 million people, 20 and older. And now they're finding evidence of artery hardening and clogging in kids as young as 10 years old. In fact, they're saying that 45% of kids 10, 11, 12, 15 years old already have evidence of hardening of their arteries. 74.5 million people have high blood pressure. One in three adults has high blood pressure. So that means if you look here and you count these three people, one, two, three, statistically speaking, one of them have high blood pressure. Now, high blood pressure or hypertension is kind of like diabetes. Because we hear of them so often, we tend to minimize how dangerous they are. But it's a very, very, very dangerous disease. It can lead to strokes, to heart attacks, to just a whole, all kinds of diseases, all kinds of problems, I mean. Now, these stats come from the American Heart Association. From 1996 until 2006, the death rate from high blood pressure increased 19.5%, and the actual number of deaths rose by 48.1%. Now, this is the question. If we have a system where we are treating high blood pressure or hypertension, why are the statistics getting higher instead of getting lower? What's wrong with that picture? It says,
I don't know, but
well, as we go on, we're going to see. As we go on, we're going to see why. And that is, some people don't take their medication. Other people don't change their lifestyles. But at the end of the day, as is diabetes, so goes hypertension. It's kind of what we've been talking about over and over and over. Your medicine should be your food. In fact, your medicine is your food. So if your medicine is your food, then if you eat bad food, you will have bad medicine and bad results. If you eat good food, that's equivalent to good medicine and good results. Non-Hispanic blacks are more likely to suffer from high blood pressure than are non-Hispanic whites. Within the African-American community, those with the highest rates of hypertension are more likely to be middle-aged or older, less educated, overweight or obese, physically inactive, and to have diabetes. All of those things, you will see, and you can almost say, you know what, that person had, after doing this a while, you can almost look at a person and say, you know what? That person has high blood pressure. They're probably pre-diabetic. Yeah, because you begin to look a certain way. Not always. Some people who don't look it many times have it because they stress, don't drink enough water. Some of the things that we've been talking about. But you will find, if you see that these things are present, you will almost always see these diseases. In 2006, the death rate per 100,000 population from high blood pressure was 15.6 for white males, 51.1 for black males, 14.3 for white females, and 37.7 for black females. What's the highest up there? Black males. You know, it's interesting. Generally speaking, black people, African-American people, generally have the most problems with high blood pressure. And when I go home up to Georgia, and I talked to the people, my family members, they said, well, I'm not giving this up, and I'm not giving that up. But they have their blood pressure medication and their diabetes medication. And we talked and said, well, yeah, I know, but I'm not giving it up. So as I said the other night, we have a choice. If we become diabetic and we're going to have to go on insulin or if we have to go on high blood pressure medication, you have a choice. You can change the way that you eat and live for the rest of your life, or you can take the blood pressure medication and the diabetic medication for the rest of your life. Because once you go on it, you're pretty much on it for the rest of your life, unless you make a choice to change. High blood pressure is the number one reason people visit their doctor in the United States. Each year, more than 100 million doctor visits are made for the medical management of high blood pressure. High blood pressure is both a sign and a causal factor in heart attack, stroke, and congestive heart failure, which makes it the leading associated cause of death and disability in westernized societies. So, as we said about before, remember I told you I had this sniper up there in the corner? The silent killer? This high blood pressure or hypertension is like a sniper. By the time you hear the shot, if you hear it, it's already too late. And so hypertension is a very serious disease. And as we can see here, heart attack, stroke, congestive heart failure. And you know, if you have problems already and you notice that your ankles are swelling and they call it edema, you know, that could be a sign of congestive heart failure. The heart has become so weak and trying to push the blood through the arteries, and it's just wearing out, and it can't deal with it anymore. And so now also the kidneys become involved. And so, I mean, it's as we talked about the other night, you can't look at the body, and this is the difference between conventional and alternative medicine. Conventional medicine takes a magic bullet approach. That, okay, if my head is hurting, the problem must have had its origin in my head. That's not necessarily so. You could be constipated in your colon, and the impurities are beginning to spill over into your bloodstream, leading to auto-intoxication, and that can give you a headache. So the origin then may not necessarily be in your head. So you have to take a whole body approach. Blood pressure drug is the number one prescriptive medication in this country. The number one prescriptive medication in this country. Now, how high is high? Your blood pressure is said to be high when either your systolic, which is the top number, blood pressure is 140 or above, or your diastolic blood pressure, which is the bottom number, is 90 or above, or both. So if your blood pressure is found to be 142 over 88, you are diagnosed as having high blood pressure according to current definitions. The same would be true if your blood pressure was found to be 135 over 92 or 152 over 95. In each case, either the systolic is high or the diastolic is high, or both. Any of these findings results in a diagnosis of high blood pressure. Most people who are diagnosed with high blood pressure have what is referred to as mild high blood pressure. Systolic blood pressure between 140 to 159, and or the diastolic blood pressure is between 90 and 99. Now that's currently considered mild. When blood pressures are above 160 over 100, a person is considered to have moderate blood pressure, and at even higher levels, severe blood pressure. Now, if you read the history over the years, what they're doing is the higher the blood pressure goes, the higher they set the norm. You understand what I'm saying? So say, for instance, the norm 20 years ago was 117 over, I'm just using an example, over 70. But as they begin to see more and more people come in and their blood pressure was 130 over, say, 85, they say, okay, that's the new norm now. So they keep moving it. And so if you look at this, what is considered normal is often pathological. For example, if a person has blood pressure of 136 over 88, it is considered normal or perhaps high normal based on the fact that it is below the arbitrary 140 over 90. But such an individual has 5 times the risk of a stroke of a person with blood pressure at 110 over 70. In fact, 1/3 of the people who die of heart attacks, strokes, and congestive heart failure have blood pressures that are below 140 over 90. So that's pretty interesting. A significant number of people die with blood pressures that are below what they consider basically normal. According to current classification, even a person whose blood pressure has risen to 156 over 98 is considered to have only mild high blood pressure. Yet, this level is much more dangerous than even 136 over 88. Sadly, the majority of people who die of heart attack, strokes, congestive heart failure have blood pressure described as either normal or mildly high. Now, again, we've been talking about every night, we've been talking about, and we've been looking at the studies, we've been talking about a scientific application of sunshine, trust in the Creator, exercise, water, air, rest, diet or nutrition, and self-control or temperance. And we've gone through and we've looked at some of the major diseases, and we've shown how a scientific application of following these principles have shown, remember those who came on Tuesday night when we talked about cancer. Remember we put up on the screen the actual studies of those who came down with cancer and those who chose to go the alternative way and those who chose to go the medical way. They went head to head, and the studies were not done by alternative practitioners. The study was done by conventional medical practitioners. And we found that when you put the rates up, and they tested and they found that chemotherapy, remember we talked about it, surgery, radiation, was beat out every time by those who follow the natural way. In fact, in conventional medicine, if something does not have at least, in general, a 30% success rate, it is considered no better than a placebo, a sugar pill. And we found that in all of the major cancers, we found that surgery, radiation, chemotherapy, pretty much all of them had down 5-year survival rate, down zero. So basically, God's way is the best way. In multiple studies conducted by world leaders in high blood pressure research, drug treatments have been found to be surprisingly ineffective. There is no clear evidence that drug therapy reduces the risk of death in patients with mild high blood pressure, which is the majority of diagnosed patients. So this is the thing that we have to remember. When we go to our doctors, and we've been conditioned, for lack of a better term, to believe whatever he or she says without asking for evidence. Like I said the other night in the cancer presentation, when the doctor says, okay, I'm going to put you on chemotherapy. So wait a minute, doctor. Let me see the study that shows that if I don't take chemotherapy, I will live longer than if I do, or vice versa. He may say, well, this and that, and I went to this school, it doesn't matter. Just let me see the evidence. Because when it's all said and done, I'm the one that will die. So at the end of the day, once you see the evidence, and then you can make an informed decision. Because the fact of the matter is that once you see the evidence, you will probably choose to do differently than what you have been suggested to do. Prestigious British Medical Research Council reported that for mildly hypertensive patients, active drug treatment had no evident effect on the overall cause of mortality. In other words, just by taking blood pressure medication, you're not going to live any longer than someone is not. But it will probably end up destroying your kidneys. In a review of the entire scientific literature, the British Medical Journal concluded that there is no appreciable benefit to an individual patient from treating with drugs a diastolic pressure of less than 100. Now these are what the scientists are saying. who actually looked at all of the evidence and they said, you know what? If you have really exceedingly high blood pressure, you can get some benefit. But unless your diastolic, your bottom number, is not at least 100, they found that there's really no appreciable benefit in taking the drug. And these guys are not alternative doctors. These guys are medical doctors. What these scientists found was that while drug treatments for mild hypertension may be effective at lowering blood pressure, they were not effective in reducing overall mortality. Put another way, hypertension patients in these studies died at about the same rate whether they took medication or not. So what's the point of taking the medication? Now, as we're going to look at, if you are put on high blood pressure medication of one sort or another, and if you are not willing to make lifestyle changes, it would be better for you to stay on the medication, because some people's blood pressure will go up sky high to the point that they may stroke out. So if you're not willing to make the changes, then it's best, well, the medication will help you stay alive. At least, you know, yet you won't just die of a stroke or be incapacitated by a stroke. But the fact of the matter is, in the long term, you're not going to live any longer than you would have absent something like that happening. Again, even if you do decide to go the natural way, do not stop blood pressure medication abruptly, because you could have problems if you do that. In a study conducted by Dr. John McDougall and his colleagues, a program utilizing a moderately low-sodium vegetarian diet with moderate exercise resulted in an average blood pressure reduction of 17 points of the systolic and 13 of the diastolic in just 11 days. Isn't that something? And now, is he a natural doctor or a medical doctor? Dr. John McDougall. Now, he came through the medical community, and once he found that what he was taught in school just was not working, he decided to start going into the natural realm. So even though he's still a medical doctor, most of the time when he works with his patients, he uses natural remedies. And so he did a study and he found that a moderately low sodium diet, vegetarian, and exercise, they were able to drop blood pressure significantly in just 11 days. 11 days. Compare these results with medication which have been found to reduce blood pressure only about 12 in the systolic and 6 in the diastolic points on average. This should be great encouragement for those who have been told that they must take blood pressure medication for the rest of their lives. Wouldn't you like to go to a doctor or either a naturopathic doctor or a medical doctor or a herbalist or whoever, and they say, look, you can be off of this blood pressure medication. If you follow these steps consistently, you can be off of your blood pressure medication in 11 days or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. Now, if you're not on blood pressure medication, to you it might not be a big deal. But if you are, and you deal with your blood pressure a lot, because like we said earlier, there are some potential problems with high blood pressure, and it's not something to be taken lightly. Again, this is a chart that they were able to produce, and to show how they were able to reduce the systolic blood pressure through various ways. And they show by a vegetarian high fiber diet, you can break it down to by 2.8 points. If you reduce alcohol, I hope no one in here drinks alcohol, but if you do drink alcohol, just removing alcohol, it reduces it by 4.8 points. Exercise can reduce your systolic pressure by 7 to 8 points, just exercising. Drugs by 12 points. Sodium restriction by 16 points. Combination of vegan, low-fat, low-salt diet, and exercise, 17 points. And they talk about doing a water fast by 37 points. Now, let me tell you something about why dehydration can cause you to have high blood pressure. The blood is about 85% water. About 85% water. Now think about this. Say I'm dehydrated, right? Say I'm not drinking enough water, which most people don't. and my blood becomes thick, right? It becomes thick because I'm dehydrated and I don't have the water in my body to keep it moving through. So the blood becomes thicker now as it's being pushed through the veins, through the arteries. Now, what happens? Because the blood has become thicker, the blood pressure goes up, right? Now, say if I'm chronically dehydrated. If I'm chronically dehydrated day in and day out, I'm heading for big, big problems. And I can take all of the drug medication that I want, but I'm still going to have chronic high blood pressure. Simply by not, in fact, in some cases, people can bring their blood pressure down simply by drinking copious amounts of water every day. Sometimes that's the origin of it, that you're dehydrated. I had someone, my wife knows about this, who they were very, very, very incapacitated with pain. I mean, to the point of where they could barely walk. Pain in the fingers and the joints. Now, normally, if you go to the doctor and he says, well, they may diagnose it as fibromyalgia. That simply means we really don't know, what's causing it. But, and I was thinking, okay, what can I do for this? And it was almost as clear as day. It was like, as you could say, God almost sent the angel and said, they're dehydrated. So I said, okay, we went to a water drinking, the equivalent of about 10 8-ounce glasses a day, which is 2 quarts, with one pinch of pure sea salt per quart. And within about a week, no more problem. So sometimes the issue is simply dehydration. And I'm telling you, our body is like 75% water. The brain is 85% water. The blood is about 85% water. So if you're dehydrated, you can see where problems are going to start to set in, because the body has a protection system, and it allocates water to the parts of the body that's most important. So say I'm dehydrated, right? And my body says, okay, the brain or the heart is most important. And so your joints and your muscles is not going to get the water that it would normally get. So the brain is not going to allocate it. So now you're wondering, man, why are my joints? And sometimes it's simply because you're dehydrated. Not drinking enough water, or drinking substances like caffeine that act as diuretics in the body to drive out water. By avoiding alcohol, stopping smoking, switching to a high-fiber, low-sodium, vegan, vegetarian diet, and engaging in moderate, regular exercise, the problem of high blood pressure usually will eliminate itself in about 85% of the people. Just doing that. Just doing that. This is by Dr. Douglas Lyles and Dr. Alan Goldhammer. So, say for instance you have blood pressure problem. Let's talk about what to do specifically. Because there's a very good likelihood that most of you in here, remember we looked at the statistics, unless we're exercising every day, drinking plenty of water, on a vegan vegetarian diet, etc., not stressing. You know, sometimes I had one person who had seriously high blood pressure. And water helped some herbal remedies helped some, but it would go down. And so finally, when you sit down and talk, remember this, there's a quote that says, 9/10 of all diseases have their origin in the mind. That is a very true statement. If you have problems controlling your emotions, you're going to have problems with your blood pressure. If you stress and worry, you're going to have problems with your blood pressure because it causes your arteries to constrict. And when your arteries constrict, what happens? It takes more pressure for the blood to be pushed through them, right? Not only that, when you stress, remember we talked about those adrenal glands? You have two adrenal glands that sit on top of your kidneys. When you stress, those adrenal glands are the shock absorbers of the body. They help you deal with stress. But if you stress, you deplete your B-complex vitamins. And once you deplete your B-complex vitamins, you have nothing to help you deal with stress. Caffeine depletes. Cortisone depletes. Many other drugs will deplete your adrenals. And so many people, they call them that they're, when people get into a stressful situation, and they're like, they can't deal with the stress. First, do no harm. When dealing with any disease or abnormality, first, do no harm. These things do harm. These things and similar things do harm. Your blood pressure will not go down. Or if it's not up yet, it will go up if you continue to eat things like this. That I can guarantee. Guarantee it. Not only will your blood pressure go up, but you will also end up with diabetes. Did you know most people with high blood pressure also have diabetes and vice versa? You almost always see it. They call it the syndrome X, because these foods cause insulin resistance. Remember when I said that there's some people who are pre-diabetic and don't know it yet? There's like three stages. First, it starts off as insulin resistant. First, you become insulin resistant. Then you get promoted to the next step, which is pre-diabetic. Then you get promoted again to full-blown diabetes, normally type 2 diabetes. And these foods and similar foods, they lay the foundation for that. High blood pressure is related to your body producing too much insulin. As your insulin levels rise, it causes your blood pressure to increase. Research published in 1998 in the journal Diabetes reported that nearly two-thirds of the test subjects who were insulin resistant also had high blood pressure. This crucial connection between insulin resistance and hypertension is yet another example of how wide-ranging and debilitating effects of high insulin, leptin, and blood glucose levels can have on your body. Remember I said earlier about when you look at the body, you have to look at the body as a whole and not just bits and pieces. And here you can see how insulin, syndrome X, they call it, too much insulin, can begin to cause all of the biological integrity of the body to be thrown off. And then, say we go and we get a drug, and we start on a regimen of drugs, and now we even upset the biological integrity of the body even more. And then, I can remember being a child and coming down here to Florida to visit my grandparents, and they had, when it was time for them to take their medication, and it wasn't something that whether or not you had medication. Everybody had medication, and when they got ready to take their medication, they would go and they had so many medications, they had them in shoe boxes. And both of them, and I thought, wow. And after they had to take them after they eat, and they would take this one, and they would take that one, and they would take this one. And then after a while, they would get put on another medication because of the side effects that the other medication was causing. And to the point to where it just kept going and kept going and kept going until now they were on entire shoe boxes full of medication. Yeah, and they still died from the very thing. In fact, my grandmother died from a heart attack. And she was on blood pressure medication for as long as I can remember. So, again, I want to put these things again so you can remember that there are penalties associated with consuming these things. And you know, the greatest blessing that the Creator has given us outside of salvation is our health. If you're in good health, say for instance you have a good job, right? But you can't function because you're sick. Or even if you can function, you can't function optimally because you have this problem, you have this issue, and you got this problem. So you want to drop them out of your diet. Don't know what happened there. Now, most of these foods and similar foods, who knows what fructose is? You find that in a lot of the juices now. And the food, let me tell you a secret, it's in almost everything. High fructose corn syrup, it's in all, they're putting it in so many things now. If you look at it, ketchup, this, that. And even natural foods, you have to be careful because sometimes now they're slipping the high fructose corn syrup in those. Now, it's very important to understand what it does and how it contributes to high blood pressure. Fructose breaks down into a variety of waste products that are bad for your body, one of which is uric acid. A lot of people who have gout, which is a form of arthritis, who in their big toe normally, they will have uric acid, a high concentration of uric acid, and that's what causes it if they eat a lot of red meat. Uric acid can also be produced by high fructose corn syrup in the body. Now, you can see at number two, it says uric acid drives up your blood pressure by inhibiting the nitric oxide in your blood vessels. Nitric oxide helps your vessels maintain elasticity, so nitric oxide suppression leads to increases in blood pressure. 17 out of 17 studies demonstrate that elevated uric acid levels lead to hypertension. So usually when people used to think of natural doctors or herbalists, even natural doctors, they have these visions of somebody somewhere, you know, in a back room with a lot of potions, you know, and smoke going up. And that's simply not the case. Also, with the high fructose corn syrup, not only does it give you or lead to high blood pressure, but also kidney disease, insulin resistance, obesity, diabetes, fatty liver, elevated triglycerides. So if you have high cholesterol, elevated LDL, cardiovascular disease overall, and preeclampsia for pregnant women. Now, we're looking at, again, bringing it down. We talked about high fructose corn syrup. Water. Now, we've been talking about these every night in some degree. Water, I just said earlier, you have to consume copious amounts of water. Dr. Julian Whitaker says, almost all the blood pressure medications mimic the effects of increased water intake. Isn't that something? So why should I go and pay extra money for something that's going to destroy my kidney when I can just drink water? In fact, he found that by drinking 15 glasses of water per day, you can have the same effect as if you were taking blood pressure medication. That's what he found. Sunshine. The very first night we talked about how all the things that sunshine does. If you're depressed, sunshine is like a drug for depression, as is exercise. Here we see it's very, very important, very, very important in high blood pressure. At least 45 minutes to an hour a day. Now the key here, I must stress, is consistency. And all of this is consistency. Remember I said also the first night that, you know, sometimes I sit down and do an assessment and I said, you know, how often do you exercise? Oh, I don't know. I said, do you exercise? Yeah, I exercise. I do. And You know, usually after a while, you can know when a person is not being honest, because the body functions on certain laws, and certain things are just not present when these laws are being followed. So when they come and they say, oh yeah, I exercise, in reality they may exercise. They may exercise once or twice a week. But that's not consistent. It needs to be at least 5 days a week. At least 45 minutes to an hour per day, researchers from the University of Michigan School of Public Health discovered at the conclusion of a 15-year study that lack of vitamin D, the sunshine vitamin, causes hypertension. Remember we talked about that the other night? We were talking about the benefits of sunshine? And you notice that we've been giving science behind everything that we say. So it's not like, you know, we're somewhere in a back room just making things up. And I mean, the evidence is, and we've only given just a fraction of the scientific evidence, just a small fraction of it. It's so overwhelming, it just comes out every day. Every day, there's new. You can't even keep up with it. Daily exercise in the sunshine, 45 minutes to an hour. Good also to do some resistance exercise, push-ups, etc. Exercise improves circulation, strengthens the heart, and helps lower blood pressure. Again, I'm just going over some of these because we've gone over them already. We've seen the science behind them already. And so there's no point in, you know, going into the detail all over again. Now also, again, for most people, what we've looked at already, you will lower your blood pressure if you do it consistently. It will come down. But you can also add a few other helps to it. And I'm going to point out some of the other helps that you can, foods as well as herbs that can also be included to help expedite what you're trying to do. Raw garlic. Garlic is a vasodilator and normalizes the blood pressure. Raw garlic is the best. Now, if you don't have access to raw garlic, the second best is a form of garlic called kaolic. Kaolic. It's the second best. You need to take at least 4,000 milligrams of it. But ideally, raw garlic. It is the best. It also, in fact, I made a combination for someone once. They were on blood pressure medication, and we combined garlic, and I didn't even use raw garlic because I put it in capsules. We combined cayenne pepper with garlic. And because she was still on her medication, it dropped her blood pressure so far, so low, that she had to cut back. And so ultimately she began to cut back on her medication. And the whole idea was, and this particular person was not even all bringing her life in line with all of the other laws of health that we've talked about yet. But garlic, the fresh juice is the most effective preparation. For high blood pressure, take one clove of garlic each morning. Prepare oil of garlic by placing 8 ounces of peeled minced garlic in a wide-mouthed jar with enough oil to cover. Close tightly and shake a few times each day. Allow it to stand in a warm place for 3 days. Now, with this oil of garlic, I put this in there just to let you know that if you make this oil of garlic, it's very, very effective during cold and flu season. In China, when they have like an outbreak, what they do is they take garlic drops, and they drop them into the nasal cavities, because in these areas, in these dark, moist areas, the viruses can grow and multiply. But garlic is a very, what they call, broad spectrum antibiotic. It is one of the most powerful and effective antibiotics known to man. That's how effective garlic is. Now, this is a one that's interesting. How many people like brown rice? I know a lot of people love white rice. White rice, you're going to have problems. I'm just letting you know. Because white rice has been stripped of the nutrients, and the body takes nutrients to break it down, but it returns the body no nutrients. So it leaves you at a deficiency. It's like writing checks and writing checks and writing checks and writing checks when you don't have money in there and you think because you have checks you just keep writing them till they run out. You're going to have an issue because pretty soon those checks are going to come back insufficient funds. And your body will return a check that says insufficient funds in terms of calcium, in terms of magnesium, in terms of some nutrient, and the cost that you have to pay is compound interest in terms of sickness. Brown rice has a specific natural compound found in a layer of tissue surrounding grains of it, and it inhibits an endocrine protein known as angiotensin II, or 2. In excess, angiotensin II can trigger serious cardiovascular problems. As you can see here, angiotensin II is a well-documented culprit in the development of hypertension. Angiotensin II constricts arteries, increases blood pressure, and forces the heart to work harder. It also thickens and stiffens the walls of the heart and blood vessels. So just by eating brown rice, you can hinder this substance and help benefit your blood pressure. Isn't that something? So that's, again, let your foods be your medicine. Beet juice. Who would have thought that beet juice is good at lowering blood pressure? Beet contains the nutrient betaine, which reduces blood pressure reduces the blood concentration of homocysteine, a substance linked to heart disease and stroke. Beet juice is an excellent issue or for liver issues as well. If you have liver congestion or liver toxicity, beet juice is very, very good for that. We also see here that it's also good for blood pressure. Now, the American Heart Association's Hypertension Journal recently concluded drinking beet juice lowers high blood pressure quickly and effectively, and could be a natural approach to helping prevent cardiovascular problems. Who said that? The American Heart Association's Hypertension Journal? That you can lower blood pressure with beet juice? British scientists at the Queen Mary University of London found that drinking beet juice lowered blood pressure to healthy levels within 24 hours. In fact, it was just as effective as prescription nitrate tablets in treating hypertension. So you mean to tell me that beet juice is just as effective as nitrates in treating hypertension? Beet juice? Have we been hoodwinked here? Tomatoes. Tomatoes contain gamma-aminobutyric acid, which reduces blood pressure and helps strengthen the heart muscle. Eating 4 stalks of celery has been shown to lower the blood pressure measurably. So wait a minute. We have beet juice, we have garlic, we have tomatoes, we have celery. Broccoli has 6 chemicals that reduce blood pressure. Carrots contain 8 compounds that lower blood pressure. Apple pectin tends to lower blood pressure. Potassium helps to lower blood pressure. Isn't that something? Hawthorn berry, one of my favorites. Hawthorn berry can dilate blood vessels, especially the coronary arteries. And you can see the recommended dosage there, 1 teaspoon of the dry herb, hawthorn herb, per cup of boiling water. Now, usually, you don't, unless it's a berry when you're making herbs, you boil the water and then you remove it from the heat and then you add the herb, unless it's a root. If it's a root, you can boil it. But if it's a leaf or stem or something of that nature, you don't boil it, for you would destroy all the active constituents in it and make them unavailable for your body. But hawthorn berry is one of this herb, taken over time, can actually rebuild the heart muscle. People who take this, who have congestive heart failure, over time, of course, by changing their diet and getting exercise and drinking plenty of water, remember, there's no magic bullet approach. It's always a total package. And then you'll find that things will happen rather quickly. And as you can see here with hawthorn berry, it can literally dilate your blood vessels and thereby make it easier for your blood to flow through your arteries. Fennel contains 10 compounds that lower blood pressure. Oregano has 7 compounds that lower blood pressure. Now, oregano, all of oregano, is one of the most powerful antibiotics, natural antibiotics out there. I know a young man who had jock itch. I mean, he had it for 2 or 3, 4, maybe 5 weeks, and he wasn't getting any benefit. And it's a fungal infection. So I recommend it. He used all of oregano a couple of times a day. Less than a week, it was gone. All of oregano is also very good for urinary tract infection. Any type of infection, all of oregano is very, very effective for it in general. You usually have to buy it to get a. In fact, and it's pretty expensive, but to get a top, because you have a lot of shysters on the market, so you have to make sure you get a good quality oil. Usually, a good quality oil to get maybe 2 ounces is going to run you about $50, but you only need a drop. You don't need much at all. It's very, very strong. It's very, very powerful.
So this is
oregano oil, not oregano spice? Right. Well, you can use it in high blood pressure, just the oregano, the leaf, the spice. Right. Now, normally, the one that you get, I would recommend you getting all of oregano at an herb store as opposed to the grocery store. But the oil, anytime in herbology, when you see the oils, the extracts, they're more powerful than just the regular tea. They call them infusions. But when you start dealing with the oils and the extracts, you're dealing with some pretty, in most cases, pretty strong herbs. A tea from either the seed or herb of yellow dock can also lower your blood pressure. Dozens of studies show that valerian root can lower blood pressure and has no side effects even when taken in high doses. The problem with valerian root, man, it smells bad. But it's effective. Some herbalists call valerian root God's Valium because it's also a sedative. It calms the nerves. And some people will mix valerian root with Jamaican dogwood. Jamaican dogwood is like a natural pain reliever. It's very powerful. It's considered to be as strong as opium without the side effects. But some people will combine that with valerian, and it will to put them to sleep. But valerian itself will help bring down the blood pressure. In fact, I put together a mixture with valerian, hawthorn berry, garlic, and cayenne for blood pressure. Very, very effective. Cayenne combined with garlic will help normalize blood pressure. Now, who was here the other night when we did the hands-on, if you were here, and we talked about how you can stop a heart attack in 60 seconds? Do you remember what do we use to do that? What say it again? 90,000 units of what? That's right. He said you can stop a heart attack in 60 seconds with cayenne pepper, but it has to be at least 90,000 heat units. If it's at least 90,000 heat units, it will stop a heart attack in about 60 seconds. I'm sorry? Huh? It was your daughter? Oh, okay. Now, I think I left it in the car, but I usually keep it on me just in case somebody keels over here from a heart attack. And I think a story I like to tell all the time is we were, you know, here one day and somebody was having some serious breathing problems. Some serious breathing problems to the point where they thought they were going to have to call the emergency room. And so what we did was I usually carry Lobelia in one pocket and Cayenne in the other. And so, you know, so they called me in, and by the time we got there, he was... So we took one teaspoon of Lobelia extract, and I gave it to him. And about 20 minutes, his breathing was back at about 50 to 60%. So we gave him another teaspoon of it, and it was back to 100% in about another 20 minutes. And so you can know that he was praising God, because it's not a good feeling to not be able to breathe. Olive leaf extract has been shown to lower blood pressure considerably. Olive leaf extract is also a very powerful herbal antibiotic. In fact, olive leaf extract, if you're in the cold and flu season, is one of the best things that you can have on hand. Now here's a particular formula that you can use also for high blood pressure. 2 parts of chamomile and peppermint combined with 1 teaspoon and a 1/2 cup boiling hot water. Take 1 to 1.5 cups daily in mouthful doses. Let's all read that together. Beloved, I wish above all things that thou mayest prosper and be in health, even as thy soul prospers. Any questions? The question is, how powerful does the cayenne in the bottle have to be? It's the same whether it's in the bottle or if it's powder. It has to be 90,000 heat units. 90,000 heat units. If you have the powder form, if the person is unconscious, you basically just have to throw it in their mouth if you don't have the liquid with you. But if they're conscious, you can put it in warm water if you have it. That's why I try to carry the liquid, because the liquid is more, you know, convenient. I can just take it out and put it in their mouth. And who remembers how much I said that I would use if a person killed over with a heart attack? Remember I said, I have a dropper there, right? I said 1 to 2 dropperfuls I would put in their mouth of 180,000 heat units. Is it hot? Remember the guy that we used, we only put 2 drops, right? The temperature that I put in his mouth was 180,000 heat units. But if you're dying from a heart attack, you don't care. Trust me. And so I'm sure you would much rather have a hot mouth for a little while and be alive than, you know, to be headed, you know, somewhere else. Are there any more questions?
My sister that passed away January 27th, she died with a heart attack. And I'm wondering if she ever got that time and help. I feel like that she was going to sit in my home because she did or not. But at the time that she felt mad to call that man, she ate her head. That time and help, bless what she could have.
She might have lived.
He said that he had told his sister died of a heart attack recently, and he had told her beforehand about cayenne pepper. And he was saying he's wondering, did she get the cayenne? And if she had it, she basically might still have been alive today. It also works for angina, heart, chest pain. My mother has a heart problem. And I told her, I sent her some. I said, always keep this with you just in case. And sure enough, she was having some chest pain. And she remembered. And she actually had the capsule, so she just took the capsule out and put it under her tongue. And she said the chest pains went away in no time at all. But again, at the end of the day, that's helping you. But what you want to do is you want to take care of the underlying problem. Else, you have the mentality of just taking drugs. Okay, I'm just going to keep taking herbs. And the whole idea is for you to be healthy so that you don't have to take herbs or drugs, unless you just want to take some herbs just to maintain or help your health overall. I'm sorry? The question was, most of the things that I mentioned, aren't they also good for high cholesterol? Yes. Because usually when you have high blood pressure, and many, many times, you also have high cholesterol. Now, there's some other things that I would use for high cholesterol as well. But there's some, of course, the basic things, the exercise and the eating right. Because remember what we said. No fruits or vegetables, you get no cholesterol from those. We need cholesterol, HDL cholesterol, which is produced by our liver. Any excess cholesterol that we get in our bodies, we get it from eating what? Other animals. Now, at the same time, we talked about those basic things that we can do to help our bodies along the way, to help keep our blood, our fluids, at 7.35 pH level. Our blood pH as well as the rest of our body pH. And again, some of those things go on in keeping the body from being toxic. And remember we talked about some of those simple things, allowing 5 hours to elapse between meals, right? Not lying down sooner than 3 hours after you eat. Not drinking with your meal. See, these things, they are simple, but if you ignore them over time, you are going to have problems. And the only way to correct those problems is to make changes. And so, remember, those basic things, waiting after you eat, I know, and if you eat less salt on your food, you will not be so thirsty when you eat. Not drinking when you eat, again, not laying down too soon, not mixing fruits and vegetables at the same meal. Yeah, I have. The question was, she said she just heard that there's some studies out now that show that hypertension causes dementia and Alzheimer's. Yeah, I've seen that. And elevated blood pressure over a long period of time, it does. It diminishes your intellectual capacity and even can send you into a state of insanity to some degree. So there, again, remember we talked about the body being all connected? So when we have, say, high blood pressure, that's not all that you have. Trust me. Or when you have diabetes, that's not all that you have. You have other issues going on. And so because the body is out of whack, and you want to bring it back into what we call homeostasis or balance.
Wow.
See, that's the power of. Yeah, you can normally when you buy it, it should tell you the heat unit. If you're growing it, you probably say if you purchase the seed or whatever to start off, it should tell you what it is. Now, if you just get it from someone, I don't know any way of knowing. But normally, if you buy the seed, it should tell you on there the heat units. And you said what was the other question? No, I don't know. No, I haven't seen that. Anyone else? It's best to stick with raw garlic. Well, as I said earlier, if you have to take supplements, say if you're somewhere where you can't get to it or you're in a situation where you need to do something, the Kylik garlic brand, it's spelled K-Y-L-I-T, I think it's called. It's like the top of the line as far as supplements go. And for high blood pressure, it needs to be at least like 4,000 milligrams a day. Vitamin C is also good to help high blood pressure as well. But I purposely didn't touch on some of the vitamins and things. The question was, I mentioned that we shouldn't have fruit and vegetables together, but the jury is still out on what's fruit. And I think and most people know generally, but there are a few things that people, they say is tomato a fruit or a vegetable. Now in herbology, they say tomato is a herb. So you know what I say? If it's a fruit, I'm going to tell you one way you can know. Say you eat an apple or orange or whatever with something that you're not sure. Say you think it's a fruit and you eat that tomato with it, right? Because the two clash, once you eat it, you'll know real soon if it's a fruit or a vegetable. Because it'll ferment and it'll give you gas. And I've heard some people say, if you have, like you said, I've heard different, some people say, well, if it comes from the ground, it's a vegetable. If it comes from a tree, it's a fruit. But then, is watermelon a fruit or a vegetable? So, any other questions? If there are no other questions, thank you for coming out. There's only one more night, and have a blessed Sabbath.
Amen, amen. My. Were we not blessed tonight? I am telling you, we have learned that we have to take a whole body approach, that we need to get moving, we need to make some right choices, and we need to understand the topic for tonight was hypertension, which is known as the silent killer. It's like a sniper, and we don't want to get hit by it. We thank you so much, Dr. Henry, for sharing that information with us, and we want to encourage you to come back out on tomorrow evening at 5 and 7 p.m., where the subjects will be regarding male and female issues. You don't want to miss it, and it will be right here in the sanctuary. So at this time, we are going to close now for prayer. Shall we bow our heads? Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. We thank you so much for allowing us another opportunity to come out and be blessed with this evening's topic. We pray now for traveling mercies for each and every one of us, that you would take us home safely and bring us back at the appointed time. Bless us to this end. Help us to take what we are learning and apply it to our lives so that we can glorify you in these bodies that you gave us. And we'll be so careful to give you all the glory, all the honor, and all the praise. It's my prayer this evening in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you once again. Get home safely, and we'll see you.